we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm David.
And tonight we've got something very special for you. Let me just say that I have perhaps a little bit of an OCD nature. A touch. And I am the type of person who really feels the need to complete a collection. I have to have all of a series, and I hate it when they release, four out of five seasons and then they don't release the fifth season or whatever it happens to be. But that really bugs me when they don't get the complete set. And it's been bugging me for a while here, despite some promises that I may have made in the past. It's keeping me awake at night that we have not finished Man from Atlantis. And so I have David here with me tonight to start filling in the uncritically reviewed episodes of Man from Atlantis that we got. Aren't you excited about that, David?
Woohoo!
So we've saved the episodes for you that Ben and I didn't want to review.
Thank you very much.
For whatever reasons. They weren't good enough, or they weren't bad enough, or somewhere in between the two.
Well, this might be, first time viewing for me for a lot of these episodes. So I know I watched the show when it was originally out, because I remember, the swimming. You go with your friends to the pool, and everybody wanted to do that. Do the dolphin swimming like Mark Harris. But I couldn't tell you that I don't remember anything about the episodes, except about that,
That is the memorable part, that he swam, and they had a submarine sometimes. Well, tonight's episode is The Hawk of Mu. We start our episode with the nefarious Mr. Schubert and his assistant Brent, and they are attempting some sort of experiment in molecular fusion, whatever that happens to mean. They're increasing some power, and somewhere in a cave, a statue of a hawk is glowing. Mr. Schubert insists that Brent continue to increase the power despite his protestations, and then all the power goes out everywhere. Well, meanwhile, the Cetacean Institute reports this mysterious power failure, which caused everything to go out, including batteries and cars, lights, hospitals, you name it, for an 80-mile radius, has made its way to the folks at the Cetacean Institute, because apparently that's the sort of thing they investigate, power failures on small islands in the ocean somewhere. And so they send the Cetacean and Mark Harris to investigate. When he arrives on the island, they search for the epicenter of the strange phenomena, and they find that it's in an underwater cave, which Mark swims to and finds that mysterious hawk, where he takes it back to the Cetacean. Meanwhile, Schubert somehow knows this is going on, and plots to use Mark to get the thing from him without Mark finding out that Schubert is behind the whole thing. So first, he sends a woman to try to seduce him, which fails about as likely as you would, say, send a mammal to seduce a fish. And then Mark runs into a poor young woman who's drowning, who, strangely enough, turns out to be Schubert's less-than-attractive daughter, and a little bit weird. But she's instantly taken with Mark and takes him home to meet Schubert. Mark is shocked that it's Schubert. Meanwhile, Schubert gets the information from his daughter where the hawk is, and the hawk's on the Cetacean, so he takes the crooked cops, bribes them, and they go out, apparently, to an underwater submarine off the island and confiscate the hawk from them and put it in the museum. Now Schubert steals it from the museum, but Mark and Schubert's daughter try to get it back by climbing up a ladder into her bedroom, but Schubert's waiting for them with the corrupt cop and has Mark put in jail. Mark's in jail and he's drying out, and that's a problem, but then he manages to get himself wet, busts down the bars, goes to find Schubert, but meanwhile Schubert's experimenting on the hawk again, and this time the hawk, guess what, turns into an actual real live hawk. And the hawk takes off and for some reason starts attacking Mark Harris, for reasons that we can't quite understand. And Mark notices that there's a thing on its leg. So he takes the thing off its leg and smashes it, and the hawk flies off, and the story is over. Schubert's nefarious plan is somehow defeated, and the Cetacean goes off into the sunset. So, David, for an episode of Man from Atlantis, when you haven't seen too many of them, what did you think of this show?
Pretty bad. Just couldn't get involved in it. I didn't know if they were trying to go for a comedy, if they're going to go for serious. You know, the scientist that was working with Schubert was just a complete numbskull.
Brent,
you know,
yeah.
You know, screaming at every little thing. It's like, okay, where's, you know, you're supposed to be a scientist.
Well, yeah.
Why are you freaking out at everything, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting pair. We have seen Brent before in Meltdown, I believe, which is, I think, the first episode of the series proper. First or second episode of the series proper. And this is third, I think, because we did do them out of order previously. And, yeah, Brent and Schubert have a very weird relationship. And it's quite a far cry from the Schubert we saw in the pilot movie, who was a bit of a nefarious and dangerous and smart character. Whereas here, he's quite the bit of a bullying buffoon. And Brent is a craven, and yet at the same time almost idolizes Schubert. I mean, he's, you know, kind of got doe eyes for him at times. It's very disturbing, frankly. It just doesn't work. This is a very abusive relationship between the two, and I don't know. So we've got them back. What were they up to?
That's a good question. I mean, did they even swim up into that cavern originally themselves? Did they know anything that was going up in there?
No.
I mean, obviously they were doing the experiments, and so they knew that with the energy dissipation and everything, and the energy disappearing. But then later on in the episode, it seemed like, oh, that was their property, and they knew about something being underwater. It didn't seem to make sense.
This story did not make a lot of sense at any level. I think, you know, we start off right in the middle of Schubert's experiments, and they're looking at some of the worst computer graphics I've ever seen. But trying to remember the time.
Seventies, yeah.
Early '70s. They imply that they have found a thing, but I don't think they know what the thing is. And they're using their equipment, which has got some directional antennas on it, to pump some power around. But I can't quite figure out what they're trying to do. I mean, just saying, oh, an experiment in molecular fusion. Clearly, they don't know what the thing is that they're doing. And they don't know that it's glowing in this cave or that it's a hawk statue. They just have an idea of where it is. And they do, after the power goes out, Schubert does take Brent along the coast and kind of points out where the thing is under the water.
Yeah.
And says, all you have to do is to figure out how to go get it, which is a typical Schubert thing. But it was never clear, except for just one little sort of comment. Apparently the island, which is not far from Easter Island, I might say, according to the story, which if anyone knows your geography, nothing is not far from Easter Island. And he says, well, according to what CW tells the cetacean guys, the power is out completely. Everything, anything with power is completely out for even things like batteries. It just doesn't make any sense. And Schubert says to Brent, isn't it lovely? And Schubert said, or Brent says, yeah, it's really great. It's very peaceful. And he says, however, if I were having my tonsils out, and Schubert says, well, you know, we won't be without little pockets of modern conveniences in my new world, but they'll just be pockets I control or something like that. So there's like one sentence that seems to think that Schubert's going to control all the electricity in the world except where.
Yeah, maybe he did know more about the statue than they let on in the episode, or he knows the mythology of it or something, because it was surrounded by Egyptian, you know, hieroglyphics.
Lemurian. That's even older than the Egyptian hieroglyphs, which fortunately Mark Harris knows how to read.
Of course
he does. And but yeah, Schubert's plan is like, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's like, turn the power up. I don't know. And Brent's like, you can't do that. And then when it blows up, Schubert's like, it's Brent's fault, or I get totally. He's just like doing things. And then, so they can't figure out exactly where the cave is or how to get to the cave, but somehow they know that the cetacean has come into port and that Mark Harris has swum to it and he's there now.
Yeah.
With their bafflingly confusing episode. I mean, the motivation behind this is the MacGuffin is that hawk. Schubert wants the hawk. He wants to do something with his power to the hawk that involves sucking energy out of the rest of the world. But I That's as clear as we're going to get. But that's only one of our many threads. Mark is in the museum studying about Lemuria after he'd recovered the hawk, taken it to the cetacean. And now he's in the museum looking at some other Lemurian hieroglyphs. We'll call them hieroglyphs for the sake of argument. The police constable comes in with a woman. And she's, how would you describe her, David?
Well, she's very beautiful.
And
she's obviously the sex pot, you know, maybe the seducer that they're going for.
She's definitely decked out for it in the low cut and the slinky and she's clearly there to try to get from Mark Harris information as to what he recovered and where it is. And she tries and she tries and she tries, and Mark is absolutely impervious to this, which in light of what we see later in the episode doesn't make any sense. But did you catch that line when the woman is talking to the police constable before she goes after Mark Harris? She says something like, I don't really like that Mr. Schubert. He's a weird one.
Yeah.
And then she says, I've never had to do a test like that before.
Yeah. What was, yeah.
Well, I don't know how to read that. I mean, well, okay, I'm lying. I know how to read that, but really? I mean, can you think of an alternate explanation other than this was some sort of naked test?
Something like that, yeah.
Or, I don't know. I mean, what could he be testing on her? I don't think it was an intelligence test.
I wouldn't think so. Definitely not something I would have gotten when I was 12 years old, probably, either.
No. See, this, we've had this on other episodes of Man from Atlantis. C.W. Hyde later on, where C.W. is off hanging with the prostitutes. And you're like, is this show for kids? Or why is that line there? I don't get it. So that fails miserably. Mark then walks off, and this girl is out on a boat, and she falls off, and Mark goes out and rescues her, and she's plain. Is that a fair?
Yeah, she's plain.
She's plain, but she's also kind of dorky,
yeah. A little ditzy, dorky,
a little loud, yeah. A little brash, perhaps overcompensating for being. She's certainly, her self confidence is down.
Yeah,
and the fact that Mark doesn't think she's awful, she's like totally taken with him, and says, you know, you got to come meet Papa. And in coincidence of coincidence, Papa happens to be Mr. Schubert. No.
Yeah, at first you don't think it was a setup, but it wasn't.
It wasn't, no. It wasn't a setup. And now we have this little subplot of her liking Mark. And Mark, he likes her. He doesn't like her in the I'm a mammal, you're a mammal way.
Yeah.
He likes her in the you're a nice person and I don't hate you. I like everyone kind of thing that Mark Harris does. But apparently Mr. Schubert is desperate to marry off his daughter. And so later in the episode, he tries to extort Mark Harris into marrying her.
Yeah, like putting him, you know, head of the company with him and everything else. It's like, I'm going to rename the company, you know, Schubert and Harris. It's like, really? I thought he was like your enemy.
I don't know. In the last time they met each other, which was, oh, no, wait, no, wait, 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 wait. I'm totally wrong here. I think the first two episodes were Meltdown and Mudworm. Both of those were Schubert episodes, and both of those had Brent in them. And yeah, they were totally opposing to each other, but in this weird Schuberty way. And so now, well, my daughter's taken a shine to you, so yeah. I want her to marry you. And he's willing to leave him in jail to dry out, so that he's, you know, in the typical Mark Harris way. You know, he loses his strength when he's not wet. And he's like, well, I'll just let you dry out for a few more hours. And I'll come back and see if you want to marry her then. Does that work?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
I mean, really, even in the 1970s, did people actually believe that if a guy that you're extorting, you get him to agree to marry somebody and then he agrees?
I don't know, yeah.
Is you really going to go through with it? Is it really?
I think maybe they're trying to play off the shotgun wedding bit, but she's not like she was pregnant or anything, and I don't.
No,
there wasn't that kind of relationship yet. And again, being the enemy, unless it's the whole, you know, I can't beat you, Mark Harris, so you got to, you know, join you. Maybe they're going that direction.
But does he really think Mark Harris would change his do-gooder-goody ways if he joins Schubert?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like, you know, he's threatening her or anything like that. I mean, it's his daughter. You know, I could see if, you know, he put her under duress. It's like, you better do this or else. But it didn't go that direction either.
No. And she's embarrassed by the whole thing.
Yeah.
That her dad would try to do this. We also have a moment, which I didn't mention in the synopsis, where after Mark takes the thing out to the sub and Elizabeth is out there studying it, and then he goes to the museum, reads some hieroglyphics, and decides he needs to go back to the cave where they found the hawk statue. So this time, Elizabeth goes with him, which is, I think, the first and only time in the entire series where she goes swimming with Mark, or indeed actually does anything with Mark, other than stay on the submarine and talk to him by remote control. And they swim out to this cavern, and they get in there, and there's this rock-sealed door. And he shows her that you just kind of she looks at it. First, she looks at it. She says, this joint is so precise. It's impossible. It must be hermetically sealed, which is not what I think hermetically sealed means.
And especially if she knows he's already been in there. It's like
That too. And then he just, you know, like with one finger, he pulls the rock back. And she goes, that's an impossible balance. Now, I don't know if you've heard or recalled some of our discussions of Man from Atlantis on earlier episodes. But one of our little pet peeves with Elizabeth has been this, well, that's just an impossible chemical. Well, spectral analysis says this can't exist. I mean, as scientists go.
Yeah, that way the writers don't have to explain anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's a good boy, if you want to call them writers. But they go into this impossible haven, and what's the first thing Elizabeth does as she walks through the door? She very unnaturally, leans off to the side with her arm very outstretched and leans up against the wall just long enough to trigger the hidden mechanism that seals the door behind them. And so it looks like they're going to die as they go into the commercial break. But fortunately, Mark reads the inscription, and it says something about a counterbalance. And he goes, well, I don't know. What's a counterbalance? And she says, what means a counterweight. Oh. And then he says, did you press anything? And she goes, no. Did you lean on anything? Yeah, kind of over here, maybe. And then he pushes it, and the door opens, and problem solved. Which... Then they swim back to the cetacean, and that was, like I said, that was Elizabeth's last time in the field, apparently, because she locks them indoors.
Yeah, and they never, she didn't study anything down there or do anything. What was her whole purpose?
I don't know. Well, she...
I mean, even if you got the door open again and your danger's gone, you still stay, do something, you know, look at it, take pictures.
They didn't take any pictures. All she did was look at the inscription that Mark had already seen and said, can you read it? And he says, yeah, it's talking about the hawk god or something. Like, oh, okay. And this episode is a series of scenes from one to the next that make no logical sense in any capacity. That I can see. And this is the point when they swim out to the submarine, and they have a lovely shot of the submarine. It's very deep. I mean, very deep, 60 foot at least.
Yeah.
60, 80 foot below the surface of the water. And they come aboard, and the first thing that happens is they come aboard the sub, and the guy who opens the airlock, the first thing he says, are you all right, Dr. Merrill? Like, she's just, as far as he knows, she's just been out swimming.
Yeah.
So why would he be all, like, concerned about her? Because she was freaking out in the cave. Oh, we're running out of oxygen and stuff. So yeah. That didn't make any sense. And then she says, oh, I'm fine. I just want to go study that hawk, right? Single-minded. And he goes, well, you can't. It was confiscated. Like, how did they confiscate it from this submarine?
Yeah, the museum confiscated it.
Yeah, the police confiscated it on this little dinky-dink island somewhere. That has, like, the old Mexico. I mean, it's meant to be some sort of, I would have said Caribbean, but they said it's Near Eastern, right? so far South American. And have I had my, Oh yeah, we've definitely had our discussion about how fast submarines can actually travel.
Yeah,
and that's a long drive from the Cetacean Institute, I have to tell you. Well, they may not have been at the Cetacean Institute, though.
It's possible.
They were on the sub. CW was talking to them, and they were on the sub at the beginning of the episode. So let's say they were over near Easter Island, and they decided to poot over there and solve this problem. And clearly, Mr. Schubert has bribed the police official, and the police official has confiscated it on behalf of the government. And now Schubert can't get it. And yet that cop seems to be totally in his pay throughout the episode. So yeah. Why didn't the cop just confiscate it and give it to Schubert? But instead, Schubert has to now burglarize the museum, very subtly blowing up the door with a getaway car nearby, and then chasing off. That was a bit of excitement as Mark had to dive out of the way of the car because he just happened to be on the spot at the right time at the right place. And then they plan ahead so that when he and the daughter try to climb in to her bedroom, he pretends not to know Mark. He has him arrested. He, you know, claims he's breaking into the house and trying – he's a cad and he's trying to take advantage of his daughter. The whole while the daughter is like, Daddy, I'm standing right here and we just came in together and you know this. This is Mark, Mark Harris. We know him. And of course, the police – Schubert's just playing along and the policeman is – I don't know why he's playing along. I mean, he's bought off.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Just a stupid plot. And of course, then we get to the scene I've already just talked about where they water him up in the jail. He's in the jail and he tricks them into hosing him down. And of course, once he's hosed him down, he can Hulk out, rip the bars apart.
That's exactly what I thought. That's the David Banner moment. You know, you get to see the eyes. I think he was wearing the contact lenses in this scene.
I think he might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, pulling those bars apart. So, yep, that's incredible. I think the Hulk came afterwards, but it's still definitely reminded me of that.
It's definitely the Hulk moment, and you'll see it in other episodes of Man from Atlantis, too. He's losing power, and he somehow tricks them into getting him wet, or he manages to fall in water or something. And as soon as he does that, then he can snap chains and burst out of things, and he's like, and yeah, it's totally his Hulk moment.
Of course, to get hosed down, he had to pretend he was beating the crap out of her. It's like they're screaming their heads off. Yeah,
with
feathers going everywhere. She's standing off to the side.
And he's just kind of flailing around with his pillow. And so they finally, you know, get the hose out and hose him down, which was a sad day for the jail of this one horse town. So Mark gets out of jail. He goes back to Schubert's house. Schubert's actually cooking food because that's lamb. What was it? It was lamb
something. I don't recall.
Florentine, maybe? Was it lamb?
Sounds might have been.
Sounds about right. Yeah. I don't know what lamb Florentine is, but he was very upset when Brent was. So Brent's doing the experiments again, and guess what? The hawk is glowing, and so now Brent is crapping his pants.
Screaming like a girl,
hiding behind a desk because this thing is glowing. And okay. So clearly they have no clue what they've been doing throughout the entire episode. He calls Schubert down. Schubert sees it. What's Schubert do? He picks Brent up and puts him in front of him and cowers down behind him. And then the moment we've all been waiting for, when the power failure occurs again, this time the statue, there's a puff of smoke, and instead there's this hawk.
Yeah, a real live hawk.
A real live hawk sitting there, and it flies out of the house. And about that time, Mark Harris is walking up to the house, and the hawk attacks him, you know, does a swoop on him. And the hawk flies up, and it comes around, and it swoops down on Mark Harris again. And it flies up, and it comes around, and it flies down on Mark Harris again. And he's grabbing it, and it's pecking at his eyes, and he's, you know, tussling with it.
Is it because Mark's from the ocean, and he's like a fish, and birds like to go in?
I don't know. I really don't know. There was no logical reason why the hawk would be attacking Mark and not Schubert.
Or it could be Mark's the one that opened up the cave originally and released everything. I don't know.
It was not good. No, it was not good. But Mark sees this, you know, the capsules that they put on the legs of hawks.
Yeah.
Only this one's huge. I mean, probably 3 inches.
Yeah, something about that.
1 inches round. And he's fighting with a hawk, and they get him out there on the beach, and he manages to get the thing off, and he falls in the water, and bursts into acidy foam, and the hawk flies off. And I'm not kidding. That's literally the end of the episode. I mean, that's it.
That was supposed to represent the energy or something.
He said
that
something.
Was in there.
Yeah. He said some babbly. I think the energy of the hawk was contained in the thing around its leg. And he goes back to the cetacean, and they're on the phone. And everybody's really interested in finding that hawk. Do you know where it is, Mark? And Mark looks all guilty and goes, "Nope, I don't know." And there's sort of like a shared look between him and Elizabeth. Like,
it's like they let it free, except he really didn't know. It flew off.
It flew off.
He didn't know where it went.
Can you make anything out of this episode? I mean, can you make – is there any thread or plot or narrative that makes sense in this episode?
Not really. I mean, even the whole aspect with Schubert going after Mark, it just kind of changed from one scene to the next. And obviously the whole science aspect changed from one scene to the next. They didn't seem to know what they were doing. I just don't know. I mean, maybe Schubert's daughter was probably consistent. That was about it.
I ponderously, you know, when we picked episodes of Man from Atlantis to do on Fusion Patrol, we knew that they were dangerously short on things to talk about, and so we picked a few that had themes or something, and then skipped a whole bunch of ones like this one. I think this is the episode that I watched and I said, I'm not doing that. No. Let's find it. You know, let's just start picking because they do get worse. And when I say worse, I mean they actually get awfully, awful, awful, awful bad. Whereas this is kind of other world bad.
More along that line. Yeah.
This is kind of in that line where it's just not, it's like, this is really uninspired writing.
And they never went anywhere with trying to give us an explanation. Okay, this is made by the Lemurian culture, and how did they get this transmogrification technology? You know, how do we get these ivory statues to turn into living, breathing animals? You know, it's like
totally nothing there.
Yeah, it didn't go anything.
Totally no explanation as to how Mark Harris knows all about Lemuria.
Yep.
Or in fact, you know, this whole area was part of Lemuria, and it sank into the ocean. Really? I thought you were the man from Atlantis.
Exactly.
See, that's a different one. But even then, he's not from Atlantis. Now, that's, you know, that's a misnomer. They just call him the man from Atlantis. That's what the Navy computer came up with in the pilot movie when they were trying to figure out who he was. The computer postulated he might be the last man from Atlantis.
Okay.
But that's totally based on pure conjecture.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything stand out for you in this episode?
Nothing stood out. Kind of question. I mean, what does the, you know, if Mark Harris hadn't come along, what could and what would the crew of the cetacean actually do? I mean, there seems to be, what, only three or four people aboard this whole ship?
I think they can't
ever get to anywhere. Everything's too deep for them, too far away for them. What exactly were they studying beforehand?
Well, if you may recall, and it never really made a whole lot of sense. In the pilot episode of The Man from Atlantis, they did not have the cetacean. The cetacean was Schubert's submarine, and it's an incredibly special deep water submarine that's very, very, very deep. And Mark blew up Schubert's base and escaped with a bunch of scientists, I think it's scientists or engineers, I forget which it was, aboard that submarine. And apparently, finders, keepers, losers, weepers, they got to keep it because in the next movie, then the cetacean was their submarine. And even now, when Schubert shows up a few years later, the rightful owner of the submarine, you'd think he would sort of make a legal claim in the courts and get his submarine back. But no. So what do they do? They didn't have a crew until Mark came along.
Okay.
Does that make sense? I mean, there wasn't a Cetacean Institute, or there wasn't a, I can't remember what it's not the Cetacean Institute. That's from Star Trek Voyage Home. The Cetacean Submarine. It's the Office of Oceanographic Research Foundation or something. They formed a team. There are about five people on that sub. There's Jomo, and then there's the girl, the Asian girl. And then there's sort of a swarthy Italian guy with a really big 70s kind of mustache. And there's like a guy who works back in the airlock, and Mark and Elizabeth. And they just I don't know what they do. I don't know what the submarine is. Why is it investigating a power failure on a little island?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get it at all.
I mean, if it shut down their ship and they were crashing and they needed to investigate it later on, I could see that. You know, like, what caused us to lose all this power? But that wasn't the issue there either.
Well, they did say they felt the effect of
it. Yeah, they felt the effect, but...
Does that mean their power went out?
Yeah, how do you feel the effect if you lose the power? Do they just get a little brownout for a second? You know,
the cetacean is meant to be the USS Enterprise. I mean, that's their starship to get from one undiscovered frontier to the next. And we have discussed this on earlier episodes, that it was just poorly thought out idea. You can't have a ensemble cast, if that's what you're going for, and this submarine when you've got Mr. Super Underwater Guy. Because he's got to do the super underwater stuff that they can't do. And he's all by himself. And then there's nobody there for him to deal with underwater. No. So...
Yeah, all they said, their whole purpose seems to be like, how you doing, Mark? Are you okay? And that's about it.
Doctor's companion, really, to kind of give him somebody to talk to. Well, I have discovered something over here by this crack in the water, Elizabeth, and I am going to go take a look at it now. Okay, Mark, we'll keep following you as long as we can. Okay, Elizabeth, swim off. I am at the crack now, Elizabeth. I am going to go in. All right, Mark. In case you're watching the underwater footage and you can't figure out what's going on. One thing I will say, I don't think I've ever mentioned this. Patrick Duffy, the actor playing Mark Harris, does a really good job of talking underwater.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's dubbed, but I also know that he had to get into the water tank and he had to blow all the air out.
Mouth the words.
And then mouth the words and then dub it in. And he's very good at that. So kudos to Patrick Duffy for underwater mouth talking. Thumbs down for me. I don't know about you.
Thumbs down.
Not a good episode of Man from Atlantis. So if you're going to start watching Man from Atlantis and you want to pick an episode to really get the flavor for it, don't pick this one.
Yeah, like I was saying at the beginning of the episode, you know, I was probably like 12, 13 years old when I was watching these episodes. And watching it now, it's like, you know, as a kid, was I excited by this? Did these things actually keep my interest? Or was the, you know, the 30 seconds of swimming, that's all I needed to see? I just can't, you know, I just don't get it. You know, unlike other shows of that time, let's see, watching Space 1999, I know you watch Star Trek, you know, Doctor Who, things like that. Those are exciting episodes and things that keep you going. You remember those years later. Man from Atlantis, I can't see ever liking that show. Why would I? Would I even understood any concept whatsoever in that thing?
You wouldn't get the idea of Schubert testing that woman?
I mean, would I just say, hey, I like the swimming bit and then just go off and do something else for an hour? I just can't. I don't get it.
I didn't get to watch Man from Atlantis. So Man from Atlantis for me was the show that I didn't get to watch. Yeah.
I might have just seen the pilots or something. Like I said, I don't remember how many episodes I've seen. I know I remember seeing it because of the swimming aspect, you know, going to the pool and the lifeguard saying, don't try to swim like, you know, the man from Atlantis because that's dangerous. So, of course, that's what all kids wanted to do. You know, you go underwater and you flop around like a dolphin.
Yeah,
other than that, it's like, I know the comic strips were, you know, were kind of exciting. You know, I was reading some of those back in the day, but...
I wonder if the comic strips had better writers.
It could be.
I couldn't have had worse writers. This is
because they didn't have to worry about effects either, so they could do a lot more.
And they didn't have to worry about how much time can we spend in underwater photography. And this episode did have its, I think, had its own underwater photography. Because having seen all of them, there's a lot of scenes that you recognize. You know, Mark going past the kelp.
Yeah.
Mark going past this particular rock. Mark turning the corner around that particular rock. This one did have scenes where he was going through underwater passages that I think were new. So earlier in the show, I think they were still shooting fresh footage that later on was less prevalent.
That's good. I mean, you get to see new scenes every once in a while because, you know, I mean, you always get stock footage in most shows, especially, you know, sci-fi type shows.
And that's why he always wears the same shorts. Yeah. So, that just, you know, any underwater scene you can use again and again and again because they all look alike. And
I mean, I would assume the show was cheap production-wise to begin with, and anything that's underwater, I know that's got to be an added expense.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's always expensive. Well, and with nothing more to say about the Hawk of Mu, let's turn to a whole different kind of animal, not one of these fly through the air, non-aquatic kind of things that makes no sense in the context of Man from Atlantis. But let us instead turn to the world of jellyfish in the episode Man o' War. And we'll just kind of talk about it as it goes. So, David, just give me your general overall impression of this episode in comparison to to the Hawk of Mu or to
the title alone. I was excited about that. Oh, Man of War, that could mean something, but no, it's like just another waste of 48 minutes or however long these episodes are. I just can't believe how bad these things really are.
You know, the funny thing is that I've actually this time I've been plotting out a chart of my enjoyment during the course of the episode. And what I found is that there are two points in the episode that I love, and then the rest of it, not so much. And basically, if you were to draw a little chart where you start off high, and then it just immediately drops to the bottom, and then it stays at the bottom, and then right at the end, it jumps back up again. That's because I love the theme song to Man from Atlantis. But beyond that... there's not much to recommend it. So what we've got in this episode is that Mr. Schubert is back. And I got to tell you, I don't like Mr. Schubert.
No.
Now, and not because he's a nasty fellow. I just don't like him. I love Victor Bono in a lot of the shows that he did over the years. And I thought he was suitably villainous and interesting in the Man from Atlantis movie. But when they've brought him back into the show, he's become comedy villain. Worse, he's become part of a team of comedy villains, along with his sidekick, Brent. The story opens up with Schubert and Brent experimenting on something. And it turns out that he has a giant jellyfish. And when I say a giant jellyfish, what I actually mean is an inflatable plastic bag that's floating in the water. They really probably would have done better had they tried to hide the jellyfish and keep it sort of menacing and in the shadows. But instead, I mean, opening scenes, we are shown full on broad daylight, not even underwater. There is the jellyfish, and it is absolutely ludicrous.
They could have done a forced perspective on a real jellyfish or something and just superimposed it, done something with it. At least that would have been at least more convincing. But yeah, this thing just looked like a floating water balloon or something. It's like,
yeah, I mean, you can practically see the seam where the plastic is sealed together across the top. You know how, like, if you have a balloon that gets heats like those oval helium balloons, and they've got a seam around the edge that's been heat seamed, and as it inflates, then it gets those. I want to call them crenellations, but...
Well, it's almost like those party balloons you buy. Like, they say happy birthday and everything, the silver ones.
Yeah, that's what I mean, those balloons. But and around the edge where they, if they've been sealed together, where they get the crinkle because they've been inflated and that doesn't expand. That's exactly what this looks like along the top. It's, you know, it's just...
And there's some party streamers that are supposed to represent the tentacles, I guess. Yeah.
Except for the rubber ones.
Yeah.
I can't think of a worse special effect I've ever seen in a movie or TV show. I really can't. I mean, worst days of Doctor Who. A Creature from the Pit. Not as bad as this.
No.
Very similar, kind of in the construction as being just inflated plastic, but horrifically bad. Anyway, Mr. Schubert and his assistant Brent have bred this gigantic jellyfish, which, and I'm not really up on it because I'm a desert dweller, but Man of War and jellyfish aren't really the same thing, are they?
No, Man of War is Portuguese Man of War. Yeah, that's you know, I don't know where in the phylum, kingdom, you know, species that they are. But yeah, but they're definitely two separate creatures.
They're two separate creatures, but they never refer to this thing as a Man of War.
No.
In the entire episode. It's always a jellyfish. Okay, and we've got some more things to say about this, about said jellyfish as the episode goes along. But Schubert reveals his plan to Brent. he's going to terrorize and use his jellyfish for extortion. And Brent says, that's kind of, you know, criminal sort of like for you. And Schubert reveals that he's broke and that this is just his way to get some money back in the coffers. I kind of like that premise. I mean, not that he's broke, but he had an underwater base and he was filthy rich and it got destroyed by Mark Harris. And then he had his attempt to melt the polar ice caps, which must have cost him a lot of money, to capture Mark Harris so he could study him and become a fish man himself. That must have cost him a lot of money. And that got totally destroyed. And then he had that undersea mining probe that had all the incredibly rare material on it, which he lost all the incredibly rare material and the mining probe. And that had to have cost a lot of money. And of course, last time he had that whole house and trying to do the Hawk of Moo and stuff. So he's not coming out ahead. And no. So we actually kind of have a story arc here for Mr. Schubert. He's gone from filthy rich to comically poor.
Yeah, and that's something you don't normally see in TV shows or movies. You know, the ramifications of spending that kind of money. They always seem to be just inherently rich all the time and can do what they want.
So it could be that this show is incredibly advanced and ahead of its time, or it could be that they just didn't know what to do.
More likely.
With the character and him and Brent. Now, for some reason that eludes me, but the research institute that Mark works for, which is the Foundation for Oceanic Research, couldn't think of it a little while earlier ago, they're putting on an international swim competition. Apparently, it's America's first international swim competition of this kind, where they're going to swim, I think he said 38 miles to an
something
island
like that, yeah.
And back. So it's a... I think that's 76 miles, if I'm not not mistaken. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. What's the channel? How far is the channel?
That's 30-some
miles. 30-some
miles. Yeah.
Well, that's America. So, I mean, we do things bigger and better. why CW is organizing this on behalf of the State Department is a mystery to me. And a mystery probably to the writers. But he is constantly being badgered by... Well, they don't call him by country, but he's Indian. And I mean India, that kind of India, not Native American Indian. He's got a turban on and he calls CW Sahib, like Haji does on Johnny Quest. And he's a white actor and he's been blacked up.
Yeah, that was really bad.
And I'm telling you, Mr. CW, it's an awful, awful... insulting. But how's your history?
My history?
Your history. How's your history on India? India was not friendly to the United States up until, I don't remember when they threw over their basically Soviet bloc alignment. Do you?
I'm not sure on something like that.
It kind of feels like in this one that they're still in the sphere of the Soviets. Because they're clearly a bully and adversarial, but it makes a change from it being the Russians.
Yeah.
And of course, with all the usual incumbent irrational demands, like we've changed our swimmer, and so now our swimmer has to be on the left because he's left-handed, and you know, this
is a big vast ocean. Does that really matter?
I don't know.
There were no lanes to these people. You're not swimming.
You're the person who's a...
Exactly.
You're the person who was qualified as a lifeguard once. I think you can swim much better than me, so does it matter?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Not out there.
Does it matter
anywhere?
We're not doing,
you know, I could see maybe as in running, maybe, I don't know, because they got, you know, different circumferences for the laps or something, but swimming, they're going straight out to an island and straight back. It should make no difference where they're placed at all.
Did you notice that there was nothing in the ocean to tell them where to go?
No. Yeah, you're going 38 miles. You're not going to see that island, most likely.
There were no boats to go along with them. Like, you know, if you have a long-distance bicycle race, there is support vehicles and stuff. There were no boats. There was...
Well, there really wasn't much of anything for an international sports event to begin with.
There was just the 15 people on the beach watching and the about eight guys, I think it was, that were in the competition. It was ludicrous. So Mr. Schubert's plan is to disrupt this exciting international race. And so he sends them a ransom note, basically, that's cut out of newspapers. We have some comedy newspaper cutting scenes with him and his assistant.
Check out that sans serif.
Yes. Yes, but that's not going to go well with that italic Helvetica, is it? Oh, it was – there was some quite the dialogue here. But my favorite was when the very first letter starts and – he has Brent go out and get all the newspapers, and Brent's got, and they're all from all around the world too. Cause even though he's poor, he, you know, add a little bit of class, would you, Brent? And, Schubert's talking about how you have to do the thing, and then he says, all right, Brent, give me a D. And of course, Brent's got the scissors and the glue and all that stuff there. And Brent looks at him quizzically and then kind of stands up straight and, and it's not funny, but it's so stupid. Michelle, my daughter, was just looking at the screen like, you have got to be kidding me. Which is the same look that Schubert had.
Yeah.
To be fair, he just looked up at Brent like, I cannot believe you just did that. But that just shows you how much they've turned Schubert and Brent into the comedy duo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was pointing out with the last episode. That's how they're coming across to me. And I'm not really, you know, you said, what, Victor Bueno?
Bono.
I mean, I'm not really familiar with him as an actor myself. So, I mean, I'm seeing this as maybe he is a comedic, you know, kind of performer that they're bringing on for this show.
He had a career doing characters who were bad guys, usually very flamboyant bad guys. Over the top. He was Count Mansepe in Wild Wild West, who was a magician villain that he and his troupe of circus performers would perform crimes. He was also a, you know, a bit of a character actor and could be made up, although with the big beard, it's kind of that he frequently has. But yeah, he's always larger than life and is always very, very theatrical and hand waving and, you know, kind of like a magician.
So, yeah, and, so a little bit for the same type of stuff, just not off the deep end comedy.
There was some comedic elements to his performance, but this is just over the top. And then you've got Brent, who is just you know, you ask yourselves, and I think maybe the writers did, because you mentioned this when we were watching the episode, that, you know, why would Brent stay working for Schubert when he's not getting paid? He's constantly being abused. He's being involved in criminal activities. And the answer is...
yeah, some kind of hotel indiscretion that I guess Schubert has photos of.
Photos of the Oxnard Motel.
Yeah. And that's all they said. I mean, they didn't really give any details.
Yeah, I'm not giving you those photos of the Oxnard Motel, Brent. And then Brent snapped too. In, you know, because he was looking like he didn't want to do the job. And then mention of those... or wait, it wasn't that. He was sucking up to Schubert. Yeah, that was it. He was really, really sucking up to Schubert about what an amazing genius and what a privilege. And even though I'm not getting paid, et cetera, et cetera. And then Schubert smacks him down with the pictures. And that brings him back into line and back to the kind of cowering.
But even then, he still seems a moron on his own. I mean, Schubert, I don't care if you have blackmail on a guy or not. Wouldn't you not want to blackmail a dumbass? I mean, what good are they going to do you?
I don't know. I mean, Brent seems to be the guy whose job it is to turn the dial on the equipment, because Schubert isn't willing to turn the dial on the equipment. And then Schubert tells him to turn it up past its safety point. And Brent's the guy that says, I'm Mr. Schubert. Already in the red already. Stern look, turn it up, and then it blows up. I mean, that's happened in both shows now.
That's it. Yeah.
That we watched this weekend.
And he gets to cook for him. You know, that's about it. You know,
when Schubert's not cooking for himself, Brent has to cook for him. That's right. He's So anyway, let's talk about Poobah. Oh, did we mention that the jellyfish has a name?
Oh,
it's Poobah. If you thought the special effects were bad for the full size Poobah, and you thought that you could do, because as you mentioned, maybe they should have done a forced perspective shot.
Yeah.
Did you not notice that they had one scene where they were monitoring Poobah on a screen?
Yeah, that was a real jellyfish.
No, that wasn't a real jellyfish.
You don't think so?
No. Well, you could see the string pulling it along for starters. No, it was probably an 8-inch version of Poobah.
Okay, yeah.
You know which scene I'm talking about now?
Yeah, I do know.
Yeah, and that was just as bad as the big one. And they totally failed to use force perspective on it. So it looked like an 8-10 inch model of Pooh-Bah. So had they gotten a jellyfish, I don't think they'd have achieved the look. As the jellyfish swam rapidly through the ocean, hunting and killing, again, I suppose I could look it up on Wikipedia. I don't think jellyfish swim, do they?
It's like a more of a pulsating thing that they do.
But they're basically dependent on the ocean currents,
yeah.
Right? I mean, I know they pulsate, but I thought that was just to pull in and filter out
More likely.
Food. But Pooh-Bah, not only can he swim, he can swim fast, maybe even fast as Mark Harris.
Not that Mark Harris ever seemed to swim fast in this episode. But.
He's faster than a dolphin. It's just that the scenes we get to see, he's the slowest swimmer on the earth. Anyway, Mark is investigating, and CW is having trouble with the foreigners, and Elizabeth is doing nothing in the sub, as you know, as happens. Occasionally she gets out and she goes, she goes to lunch with CW at a restaurant on the shore, and Mark has discovered something. What Mark has discovered is that there's a great white shark has been attacked and killed by Pooh-Bah, which I'm not convinced by, but...
And eaten. Yeah.
And eaten. In fact, he's so eaten that he was stripped away to the bones and there's nothing left but the jaw, which looks to be about 35 years old and dried out.
Did Mark supposedly see the incident, or is he just assuming just because he found a jaw that washed up on shore? I mean, I wouldn't get that correlation from that.
No. But when they go into this restaurant, did you see... Obviously, Mark's in his swim trunks, and the maitre d' is outraged that, you know, we don't let people in without ties, and we could loan you a tie, but that's only for people who have shirts already, and you have to have shoes on. And, of course, Mark doesn't care anything about that. But was that maitre d', well, what would be the word you'd use to describe him?
Are you also going for flamboyant on him as well?
I'd go so far as to say flamboyantly camp.
Yeah.
I do believe he limped his wrist a couple times when a... again, Man from Atlantis, this has got to be a kid's show, doesn't it?
I think so.
It has to be a kid's show. And yet, we keep having lines about Mr. Schubert having blackmail material on Mr. Brent. On Brent. I don't know if it's Mr. Brent or Brent something, but on Brent. And, there's only one conclusion that the Oxnard Motel photos means. Brent was doing the nasty with somebody he shouldn't have been.
Yep.
And...
But again, those are those passing mentions they sometimes do in shows where, you know, you watch what you thought was a kid show when you're young, and they always have that another meaning later on as an adult.
Yes, but that only happens in a show that was meant for adults.
Yeah.
And, but can be enjoyed by children, too. You know, there's that... I don't know, but I have to say, it was...
This was a primetime show over here, right?
Correct, correct. But I think it was an early evening, and it was, you know, designed for family hour.
Family hour.
But I have to say, I watched that, and the waiter was so gay. There's no other word
definitely.
For it. He's obviously gay. Stereotypically over the top, that fussy maitre d' type gay. It made me uncomfortable to watch it. It really did. I mean, it was like, wow, that's almost like watching the Indian guy be a white guy blacked up.
Both in the same episode.
In the same episode. If he'd actually been blacked up like an African and kept opening his eyes real wide and talking about fried chicken, then that would have been worse. But it would have been hard to be worse than the Indian guy and the gay waiter. It was a product of another time. And I don't think the 1970s was that time either. I think you needed to go back further for that to have been quote unquote culturally acceptable. Those are the disadvantages of going back and looking through the time, the time capsule. What else have we got on this episode? I mean, I think you understand that, you know, the notes keep coming in, the threats keep coming in. Mark tracks Pooh-Bah back to his lair. But this is intentional because Mr. Schubert wants to capture Mark. So he captures Mark because Mark's stupid or gullible or, well, lacks certain basic survival skills. And he gets tied up in a chair where, oh, darn, there's no water. And you know how Mark is when there's no water. So he gets a new superpower. In this episode, we learn that he can make noises. Do you think Patrick Duffy was making those noises, or do you think that was a special effect that was dubbed in?
I think probably a special effect dubbed in.
Wasn't quite whale noises.
No.
It was like... kind of like that. And it was bothering Mr. Schubert because it was a noise. So Mr. Schubert, who's in the room, this is the kind of comedy that Mr. Schubert's in the room, Brent's in the room, Mark is tied to a chair. Mark starts making these noises. And Schubert will say things like, what's he doing? And Brent will go, I don't know, Mr. Schubert. And Schubert will go, well, tell him to stop. He's 5 feet away from him. And so then Brent goes, okay, Mr. Schubert, and then tells Mark to stop. Anyways, then some sort of sea monster comes up and starts smacking the pier that Schubert's house is on and, you know, rocking it down. We never see the monster, which is probably a good thing, but Mr. Brent says it's like nothing anybody has ever seen before.
Yep.
Some sort of colossal sea monster that no one's ever seen. We see some bubbles.
Yeah. But camera work-wise, it looked like the whole city was shaking, but I don't think that was supposed to be the point.
Oddly enough, yes, when he was running outside and then the thing was shaking, it was like the California hills in the background were rattling along with the freeway and everything else behind them.
I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff.
It was pretty powerful stuff. And it, so powerful, in fact, that at some point the overhead ceiling sprinklers burst open and got Mark wet, who then marked out, snapped his bands, and instead of beating up Mr. Schubert, he walks away. Of course, Mark immediately goes back to CW and tells him it's Mr. Schubert, tells him where Mr. Schubert is, tells him where Mr. Schubert's incredibly elaborate laboratory with giant pit built into the bottom of his floor and has a cage underneath it with an underwater dock approach for Poobah. And they all go up to Mr. Schubert's house, within an hour.
I would think so.
And none of it's there anymore. Mr. Schubert's all, oh, Mark Harris, how are you? Good to see you again. And I know I don't have a thing in here. The thing is, there's a carpet on the floor right where the tank was. And Schubert even says, what, you think there was a tank right here where this carpet is? No, 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 there's nothing under this carpet. There's just cement and wood and planking and then the ocean below. It's like, and they got warrants. They got the FBI. They probably have the CIA. Treasury Department, who knows who they've got there. They got a whole bunch of suits there from the law enforcement agencies, from the feds. And nobody bothers to even lift the corner of the carpet.
Nope, of course not.
They're just like, oh, and they leave. And they go, well, nothing we can do here. Like, I don't know. How about looking underneath and see if the entryway is there, Mark, or... it was awful. It was terrible.
Schubert that supposedly respected in the community that people are going to just listen to him and not investigate at all?
Well, Schubert Industries, or Schubert Enterprises Limited, I should say, is pretty awesome corporation. And so, you know, maybe. I mean, he's not known as an evil organization. It's just that for some reason, Schubert always does evil things. And apparently only the Oceanic Research Foundation know anything about it, but he never gets – maybe it's because it's done on the high seas and that's not a crime. No jurisdiction there.
Exactly.
But this is extortion on the American mainland, so you'd think they'd be able to put him away.
You would think so, yeah, because in the other episode, the Hakamu episode, I mean, he was, you know, definitely giving people the money, like the jailers and everything like that. He was,
and it was a small
– yeah, small island.
Little island, so – That's a little bit different. Yeah, here we've got, you know, he's right in the U.S. and making his
I mean, you could have just shuffled your feet and lifted that carpet. You didn't even have to bend over.
They had a warrant.
To do something, yeah.
They had a warrant. They could have done anything they wanted, but they didn't. But they're not, you're not going to take Man from Atlantis' word for it because he's some crazy guy. I just saw this stuff. So the other thing that that gets me about that is as they leave, they make a point of saying, you know, we're just going to keep a really good eye on you, Schubert. Schubert's like, well, you know, well, go ahead. So when the contest is getting going, they decide on this very clever plan. Mark will be in the water. Ooh, ah, duh. Elizabeth will be on the pier with a bullhorn. And should Mark see at any time Pooh-Bah, he will wave at Elizabeth. Elizabeth will shout in the bullhorn and tell them to get out of the water. Seems like a foolproof plan to me. And of course, the feds, like 15 of them, are following Schubert around, who has come down to the beach with Brent under a nice shady canopy and is sitting there with his little radio talking with Brent within, what would you say?
Probably 5 feet.
5 feet of all these agents who are watching him like a hawk of Moo. And he keeps talking to Brent about their extortion demands, their use of Pooh-Bah, how they're going to send another note after this has occurred. He even talks about how they'll never know that this radio I'm holding is a fake that has the control mechanism cleverly hidden in the dial. They're all standing right there.
Their jobs are to pay attention to what's going on in the water, not what's right in front of them.
No, those guys are following Schubert. So I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, wow, these things sound bad, don't they? I mean, how is the man from Atlantis ever going to save the day on this one? The feds have been totally foxed by Mr. Schubert. It doesn't really seem likely that Mark can outswim a jellyfish. And will Elizabeth's bullhorn be strong enough to shout 38 miles exactly. If they get very fast? Assuming they don't all get lost because there are no course markers, buoys, or chase boats.
Nope.
Which maybe that's what we wanted to do to the Indian guy. Is get him out there in the water and drown. Which would lead to an international incident that your company would not want. Pooh-Bah makes an appearance. So what happens? Mark gives the alarm and they get out of the water. And then Mark goes swimming right up to Pooh-Bah, who is, oddly enough, just sort of floating there like a balloon being suspended underwater. And did you get an impression? Was he attacking Pooh-Bah, or was Pooh-Bah supposed to be attacking him?
I'm thinking that he was supposed to be being attacked, though obviously the stingers weren't having any effect on him, but that could be part of his physiology.
But have you noticed, I mean, even later in this episode, they use the time-honored tentacle attack mechanism. They wrap the tentacle around the bad guy or the good guy or whoever's being attacked, and then they run the camera backwards and they pull the tentacle off of him because, I mean, that must be the oldest rubber monster effect in the book.
But somebody actually did the tentacle to them. Usually the guy, didn't they hold the tentacle themselves and twirl in circles and then makes it look like you wrap up?
Right. But when you're running it backwards... Yeah. That doesn't happen. But in this case, Mark didn't have that benefit because he had to, or Patrick Dunphy, I suppose you should say, he had to swim right up to Pooh-Bah, who is just sitting there, utterly motionless. And he basically swam right up and grabbed the tentacles and started wrapping them around himself. And then, after getting all wrapped up, what does he do? He starts making his funny noises again. Next, we see Pooh-Bah is now totally in the thrall of the man from Atlantis, and he's pissed off at Schubert and Brent. So Pooh-Bah captures them by wrapping his rubber tentacles around them backwards until they give up the control device, which they never do. They just turn it up full, and it blows up. Schubert manages to escape. Brent does not, and...
Yeah, he gets pulled into the water with
him. The water with Pooh-Bah. And then we're just given a little brief scene afterwards that says, I took him back to the ocean, deep ocean. And Elizabeth said, yeah, he was on the sonar, 10,000 feet and diving fast. That's pretty impressive for a jellyfish. I don't think jellyfish do that either. So Pooh-Bah was a very extraordinary jellyfish.
So I assume it's the freedom that allows him to do that later on, because beforehand he was always near the coastline. He never, I mean, even the swimmers, if they'd gotten more than a mile out as it is, I don't think he could even have followed them. He always, because even when Mark was investigating, was always right. He said he'd go up the coast looking for him, never like out into the ocean.
Yeah, well, not the least of things that don't make sense in this episode. Oh, yeah, there is one scene I should point out. There at the end, the Pooh-Bah comes back and he does capture Schubert around the neck. And Schubert is like being choked. And Brent is on the other side of the enclosure. And he's like, Brent, get an axe. Get an axe. Help me. And Brent doesn't help him.
No.
And I thought he was terrified. I mean, my take on his reticence to run over there and help was that he was terrified. Of course, Brent does always kind of look terrified. So
I just thought more of his, that's just him being stupid again with everything else he's always doing, not knowing how to follow instructions properly.
Could be that too. I'll go along a little terrified, a little stupid. I'm perfectly acceptable with that. So what Schubert does is he says, I'll burn the negatives. And then Brent is right on it. He's like, oh, well, I'm coming to help you, Mr. Schubert. So again, with the blackmail angle on this episode, what stands out for you in this episode?
Not much. I mean, obviously, you know, we've talked about the jellyfish and how bad it looked, but
bad.
You got to kind of take that sign of times, cheap budgets, you know.
Cheap budget. Look at this show. I'm sorry, that show was shot virtually entirely on location, and you know, looking at the DVD release and realizing that it hasn't been completely digitally remastered, but it's certainly been cleaned up a little bit, or at least it was made from a good print. It looks gorgeous. I mean, the cinema. I mean, it's comparing it to Doctor Who from the 90s. The sets look like sets, and I mean, look like buildings, and the they're on location, and that's they even have Gary Owen in it. Is it Gary Owen? Yeah, it must be Gary on Voice of Space Ghost, the announcer guy from Laughing. Everything looks good. I mean, it's very well shot. It's very professionally done until you get to that effect, and that is just absolutely the worst thing I've ever seen. I don't think they've even had worse effects on Star Lost.
Really. That's saying something.
That is, because now if they had a giant jellyfish on Star Lost, or perhaps if later on they have giant insects or something, that could be worse. But otherwise, I think right at the moment, Man from Atlantis, Pooh-Bah, is holding the worst effect mantle. I don't – like the other one, I got nothing. I mean
– Yeah, it's like a one-sentence plot, and they stretched it out and really didn't do much.
It did kind of at least have a plot. I mean, Hawk of Mu was kind of slim on that department too. This one at least kind of had
He was trying to go, you know, get the money.
You know, he was progressing his extortion plan in stages. You know, scare somebody, send a note, kill a shark, send a note, attack the fish, or attack the swimmers, send a note. So,
but obviously he never achieved any of this. So I wonder if in future episodes, if he comes back, that will be – if things will have changed, or will he be completely poor at that point?
I am sadly here to inform you that off the top of my head, I can only think of two remaining episodes that we didn't do on Fusion Patrol. And Schubert's in one of them.
Really?
Yeah, he's back for Crystal Waters, Muddy Death, or whatever it's called. I think that may be the last time we see him. But that's probably just because they canceled the show, not because he was never coming back. Okay, well, we've knocked two out of the list for making sure that we have every episode of Man from Atlantis covered on a podcast. So unless you have anything else, David.
I think I should do it. Just hopefully looking forward to the next ones, because they've got to be better than these two. They just have to be.
They don't.
How can you get worse?
You know, here's the thing. I tweeted this a long, long time ago when I was watching The Man from Atlantis. Before I had the DVDs. Yeah, I have the DVDs. When I was watching them from another source, and shall we say. And I was watching them in order. And I felt like Meltdown was, you know, not very good. And Mudworm wasn't very good, but, you know, they were kind of standard action plot. And then you get to episode 3, Hawk of Mu, and I just thought it was kind of nothing. And so when we were doing the episodes, I said, well, you know, I was like, yeah, this is kind of nothing. We'll go on to the next one, which was Giant with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And then there was this one. And then I have a bad feeling that we're up to the cowboy one or the Naked Montague. And they literally do keep getting worse and worse. Some of them, these earlier ones, are just nothing. The later ones are really awful. Really, really awful. So
maybe the network, you know, were excited when the show had good ratings and was going to get picked up. And then they're, oh, wait, we don't really know how to do this show. And they intentionally are doing a bad show so they can get it canceled and get it off the air.
It does almost feel like that. Some of the scripts do actually feel like, he's like, really? You were going to try to pull that off on somebody? Did nobody read this before it's made? Apparently not. All right, folks, thank you for joining us for this overlong analysis of two more episodes of Man from Atlantis. We will be back not next week with more Man from Atlantis. We'll have other stuff, but we will finish off Man from Atlantis so that your collection can be complete too, because I'm sure you all burn these off to CDs so you can listen to them again and again. Hey, this is a better comedy routine than Schubert and Brent.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thank you, David.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. We hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol. Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, search for Fusion Patrol, or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.